Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Tony Smith.
Oh, it's that other game where Andre Branch made a play. The Tennessee game on Thursday night last year.
We saw the windmill, Tony. It was out.
It wasn't just on the game against the Indianapolis Colts where he looked like a force to be reckoned with, but he made the play to end the game against the Tennessee Titans here on Thursday night. Of course, Andre Branch now down in Miami, and the Jaguars relying on other pieces, other players to try to find that pass rush this year as Clemens and Branch out the door. And I think we all think they might be better for it.
Reports say that Andre Branch has been looking good in the offseason.
He always does. He's one of those guys, if there's, as I've heard Jeff Loggeman say when he's joined us on Tuesdays throughout the season, if you're just going outside and you're going to have a pickup game, and you're looking around the field to say, hey, who do I want on my team? Andre Branch is among the top handful of guys that you look at and go, ooh, that looks like an athlete. It's just the lights came on, and he didn't do enough, obviously, to get a second contract here in Jacksonville.
He's the definition of...
He's solid.
He needs to get better. You're right, Gus. He definitely needs to get better, which is what we know Gus Bradley means when he says comments like that. John Urschel will be joining me today on the program. We'll continue to talk about going into the offseason for this Jacksonville Jaguars team. Obviously, a lot of excitement about all the new pieces here in Jacksonville, what exactly they're going to mean, what exactly they will look like. Obviously, everyone wants to get their 53-man roster out there right now, as Jeff Brosser pointed out. So maybe we'll take a look at some of those today on the program as well. I still think it's really tough to figure out what the bottom end of a roster is going to look like until you have some idea of how somebody feels about somebody on special teams. Which is where those guys are going to make a difference for you, is on that special teams area. And this team has interesting decisions when it comes to that, just because of some of the numbers games that they have to play with some of these positions. We'll talk about that a little bit today with John Osher. The fan feedback spotlight question of the day, I think it's a good one. I think I came up with a good one today. And coming out of a weekend where the five-part documentary OJ Made in America premiered on ESPN, and part five, I think, was Saturday night that it finally premiered on ESPN, but all five parts are on demand, or if you have the ESPN, watch ESPN app, you can go back and watch any of it you want. It's one of the best 30 for 30s they've done to this point, and it's not like they don't knock it out of the park every time with the 30 for 30s, but they did again with this particular one in OJ Made in America. So I thought, okay, what Jaguars story would make for the most compelling 30 for 30 documentary on ESPN? And because I know if I just asked it that way, that everyone would say the 1996 team and that run into and through the playoffs to the AFC Championship game, I decided to make you think a little bit outside of that, because I didn't want to just get a bunch of 1996. So outside of 1996 with this Jaguars team, what would make for the most compelling 30 for 30 documentary? If you want to get involved with the fan feedback spotlight today, you can. It's simple. At 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, at John Osher, who will be joining me here in just a couple minutes. Also on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. We'll get to some of your answers a little bit later on the program. I have a couple ideas kind of circulating in my head for what I think would be kind of interesting from a 30 for 30 perspective. Think outside the box a little bit. It doesn't just have to be this season. It can be something broader than that. With the Jacksonville Jaguars. And heck, if you wanted to use some angle with the Jags to kind of expand to make it more of an NFL show or something like that, you certainly could do that as well. Be as creative as you want to with the ideas. We're already getting a bunch of 1999 specifically, whether or not Tennessee had the Jaguars plays, basically the defensive audibles for the AFC Championship game. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. You can go to gunsforjacks.com. or give them a call at 904-693-0777. John Osher will join me in studio next. We'll continue talking Jaguars offseason and that 53-man roster, that pesky little thing that we do here at the end of June, seemingly every year. We'll get into that with Johnny O as we get things rolling on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, Johnny O's in the house. Fat Tony here with you. Mike Dempsey on vacation for another 10 days, believe it or not. He'll be back on the 30th. So you still got a while.
Is it not a vacation? Is it?
I don't know.
Is it a missing person?
What does it become? Yeah, right. I was going to ask, what does it become?
At what point does vacation become a missing person?
Right. For? I may need you to carry me a little bit today, John. I'm not... I have a friend of mine. I actually have to skip crosstalk with the Midday Chalk today because I have a friend of mine that's getting married up in Neptune Beach.
Oh, really?
At 2 o'clock. And
married on a Monday.
Yeah. These Good. Are the types of friends that if he's getting married on Monday at 2 o'clock, that means the party started Friday about when I got done with Jaguars today.
Was it, as of Friday, was he getting married or is this over the weekend?
He was getting married. Right, it was okay. planned.
All right.
It was planned. And I actually think it's just
That's
like,
a good wedding now.
Yeah, I think it's just a ceremony officially. I think they've actually already gone to the courthouse to get it done.
They're
just doing this for the family.
Okay, good.
I don't think the family knows that, and I highly doubt they're listening to me right now.
Well, that's...
And if I spoiled it, I'm sorry.
You only live once. You got to gamble.
I will apologize, but it was a long weekend.
Oh, good.
It was a fun weekend, but it was a long weekend for me. How was yours?
Fantastic. I can't complain. Yesterday was the first Father's Day that I hadn't been with my son since he'd been born, so that was odd.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing an internship up in Delaware and seems to be happy, so as a father, that's what you're looking for.
Sure.
More than that. So, but he called, so that's, you know,
Aww.
That's that moment. So, yeah, it was good. It's getting to that time of year where we get a little bit of downtime,
mm-hmm.
and I look forward to that, frankly.
I look
forward to training camp starting, but I look forward to this month as well.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter last night with the NBA Finals getting done, and we're not going to get into the NBA Finals here on Jaguars today, but with the NBA Finals getting done, I saw all over Twitter, it's like, okay, now we just have to wait for football season. I'm like, you guys, man,
yeah,
embrace it.
Well, and it's true. I mean, I go through the same thing. I really enjoy the hockey playoffs. I don't watch hockey 11 months a year, but during this time of year, I'm always bugging Blue on the practice field, talking hockey, and you know he's rolling his eyes because I know beans about it, but I love it, so I'm that guy. But once it's over, it's a gap, but it's a good gap, and it makes you look forward to training camp.
Yeah, whatever hobbies you have, this is the time. Your weekends are open right now.
Yeah.
And in 6-7 weeks, they will no longer be
Get to know the
open.
Family again.
Yeah.
Jaguars Twitter.
Go enjoy
Go
it.
Talk to your parents.
I think today is officially the first day of summer as well.
Yeah.
I think spring finally ended, even if it has felt like summer for a month.
Boy, it was hot Friday, boy.
Well, you are kidding.
That was the real deal. So.
Yeah. I went out and played golf in that, just stupidly.
Yeah, I ran in it, which wasn't very smart.
No.
But it's
No.
I felt it.
Yeah. It's like, I can handle this. And you get out there, you get 4 or 5 holes in, you're like, I'm a fool.
Yeah, I thought I could. I couldn't handle it.
Just that kind of thing. Obviously, the popular thing going on with a lot of the Jaguars beat guys right now is trying to fill out their 53-man roster. Do you have anything like that coming?
You know, I was going to, and then it just seems sort of, once you start doing it, it's really a pretty straightforward deal. So I kind of went another direction. I'm going to do some weekend focuses and you talk about what we learned from training camp. I mean, from my mini camp this week. So I agreed for the most part. I read O'Halloran's over the weekend and my first thought was, well, he nailed it. And my second thought was, well, it's a good thing. The roster seems pretty straightforward right now. And there's some injuries that will creep up and will cause some of those to change.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, dead on. I think they keep 10 defensive linemen. And I think most of the position groups have some really good potential core players and some pretty obvious guys that you like as backups. A lot of the reason it's so easy to cut the team or to project the 53-man roster, so we think, is that a lot of the players who are now projected to be reserves are guys who have played a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So you're very comfortable with them as your fifth guy. If you're putting, Grotz as your fourth corner or Colvin as your next, those guys have enough experience that you figure they do have the edge over some of the guys that normally would have been that marginal fifth guy. So I think making the roster deeper has made the 53, at least from our perspective, a little easier to project, and it makes you feel a little better about that 53.
No doubt. And I agree with you. I think that when you look at the 53-man projections that we've seen, I know I heard of the guys on the Midday Chalk doing this last week as well on Friday. And look, I'm not putting together my own 53, but I generally agree with what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And look, honestly, we talk about this, and we'll talk about it when we get to training camp too. I think NFL teams know, outside of by the time they get to training camp,
they have a good idea.
Yeah, there's probably 4 to 5 positions that are really open on an NFL roster, and everything else, they have a really good idea of what it's going to be. And the separating factor for that a lot of times is not only have you invested a draft pick in them, are they developmental guys, like a guy like Nick Marshall, like how much you believe in them, or you weigh that against, well, how much can they help us on special teams right now, and how much do we need that help? And I think there are some players where the Jaguars are going to have to ask that question, but because of the depth on the roster, I don't think they're having to ask it as much as they have in the past 3 years.
Well, exactly right, and there are some battles that'll happen. I think one that seems obvious is Denard Robinson, Corey Grant, the kick returner. You know, it'll be interesting during preseason to watch. I would assume that they'll alternate those guys at some point during preseason, let them both return kickoffs, and probably let the best man win.
How many fumbles between training camp practice and the preseason games would it take for Denard to not make this team? Like, is there a number with that guy? Just because of the way you saw him in the season.
But he has to inspire some more confidence. I mean, I don't think they envision him. I don't think they want him in a role where he's carrying a whole lot in the offense. Obviously, that's why you've got Chris Ivory and you've got TJ Yeldon.
Absolutely.
I would say he needs not to fumble in preseason because as of last, it's become the storyline with him now. Is the problem. So it's something that people are watching, and I'm sure the coaching staff is watching. Denard knows people are watching it. All this is obvious. So he can't continue to not inspire confidence in the preseason.
And it's really a shame for Denard, given that, look, he was dealing with the arm issue his rookie year, so he couldn't catch the ball. He had problems holding on to the ball, and then his second year looked like was a bit of a breakout year for Denard. But he had the 100-yard rushing game. He excelled in the opportunities that he was given as kind of the feature back for this team and was holding on to the ball. And then last year, it all crept back in, and it just wouldn't go away over the second half of the year.
Yeah, it got to be a thing. And, that's the negative. The positive is he has shown that during a short stretch, he has the capability of being productive at the running back position. So he's got that. When you're sitting there trying to decide a roster, you know, coaches kind of close their eyes and say, okay, how can we use this guy? Well, that's one in his favor. Mm-hmm. And the pure speed and playmaking ability, that always helps you when coaches are trying to figure out who to keep. So that's why he's a hard cut because of that, because you've seen him do things where a 5-yard play has become a 25-yard play. And that's awfully enticing to people who are putting together an NFL roster.
Yeah, no doubt. And Tyler, did you want to add something there?
Yeah, I actually have a cut from Gus Bradley the day after the Houston game on the last game of the season. Obviously, Gus was asked about Denard Robinson's capability of holding on to the football, and here's what he had to say about his whole season last year with his fumble issues.
Some of it was, you know, the exchange between the quarterback and the, you know, that was last week. But, I think it's a valuable lesson for him. I think he's cleaned up a lot of it, but you can't have him on occasion. You can't have one, if you fumble on the 45-yard line, you know, it leaves a short field, and those are tough situations. So, you know, I think you just got to keep developing that mindset and take care of the ball and understand it's an aggressive defense that's going after it. That's why taking care of the ball is so important. So he's got to learn that.
Do you think they keep both? Because, look, we know what 1 and 2 looks like on the depth chart and what order they're going to be in. Who knows? I don't know how much it matters at this point for this football team. But the TJ Yeldon and Chris Ivor are both going to get the ball a lot this year.
I think they keep 4. I don't know if it's both of those guys.
Okay. Do you like the idea of keeping 2 of kind of the Corey Grant gives you kind of that speed? I guess the athleticism is what you like about Denard Robinson too. Or do you just pick one as the kick returner and keep a guy like Jonas Gray who feels like a direct backup to either one of those top guys?
I would be surprised if I think they'll keep four and keep Gray and one of the two behind them.
Okay.
Just because it at some point when you've got to save some room, because I think they're going to keep a lot of defensive linemen. And I think that's going to be the position they really load up at. I think 10 is a lot, but it's probably the number they keep. So you've got to, it's hard to keep five at every other position that you know, it's hard to keep five at running back if you're keeping not 10, not defensive linemen.
Right. And because of the surplus of defensive linemen they have and another roster issue they're going to have at least for the first month of the season, and that's what to do with the defensive backfield mm-hmm. as well, with Aaron Colvin being out, which we'll talk about here in just a moment, and what that kind of puts a crunch a little bit on what you're doing with the roster, because you almost have to keep an extra cornerback, at least for that first month of the season, because Colvin's just not going to be available to you unless you want to roll the dice with only having four guys on the roster, which I doubt they would do. We can talk about that in just a moment. John Osier joining me here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey out on vacation, will be for the rest of this week and most of next week as well. We'll continue talking about the Jaguars roster and some of the number crunching they're going to have to do with this 53-man roster when everything is said and done coming out of the Jaguars offseason, as we roll along on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
I see what you're doing, Tyler. I see what you're doing as we're coming back with the 30 for 30 like promo music right now.
Ah.
The fan feedback question of the day.
What if I told you?
Yeah. The fan feedback question of the day today. Outside of 1996, which I think virtually every Jaguars fan would pick for this kind of thing, I just didn't want to get that answer over and over and over. And heck, it's such a big story in Jaguars history that I'm sitting here with a guy who's actually written a book.
You said it.
About what happened in 1996, as John Osier joins me today for a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. But the fan feedback question of the day today, we're asking Jaguars fans, outside of 1996, what Jaguars-focused-centric story do you think would make for the most compelling ESPN 30 for 30?
Yeah, I think one that will be eventually a really good documentary, I don't know if it's 30 for 30 sort of thing, when this team gets back, which it appears on its way to, I think the sale of the team, Ashad Khan taking over, his story, how close it ever was, you know, to leaving, whether it was or not, would be interesting interviews with people as we get away from that time.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne's ability to find the owner to keep this team in town. I think as this team gets better, it will become more of a national story of, oh my goodness, this is a phenomenal NFL city. How did it ever make it through that time?
Mm-hmm.
I think at some point that will be a really good story once you have a chance to step back and look at it historically. We're right in the middle of it now, so nobody's going to do a documentary on it. But it's a pretty amazing thing when you think about the national perception versus the local reality throughout all this time. When this team makes it and becomes the team that these guys are envisioning it to be, I think it'll be a really, really interesting story, how it all broke down behind the scenes. And if you throw shot into it, it's a really fascinating story.
And I think Jaguar fans would obviously really dig that kind of thing, especially mm-hmm. if this thing turns around, which I think a lot of them are expecting it
sure.
to in the very near future. And that's the kind of story, like if I was living in Chicago, you know, and I watch all the 30 for 30s
right.
anyway, when that one came on, I'd be going, do I really want to watch a Jaguar one?
Right.
And when it started and they start talking about, you know, who Shad Khan was and where
right.
he came from and everything that was going on with this team and this city that you don't know from the outside, right? Like
correct.
you don't know this story if you're not in Jacksonville and really paying attention to it. I think it would be fascinating
mm-hmm.
For any NFL fan to actually hear.
Well, because it's always, and I know you go through this, there are many national media guys, a lot of the national media guys that I've known for a long time, they understand what Jacksonville really is because they've been here before doing stories like in the late 90s. They understand that there is a misconception about the town. But then you'll also talk to people, younger reporters, younger media, who once they get it, as soon as you're talking to them at the combine or something, and the light comes on, they're like, oh, the team's not really moving, is it? And you're like, no, this Shad Khan is this, and this is this.
Right.
And they're always fascinated by, well, why not? And then you explain the fan base, and you explain Shad Khan's commitment to it, what they've done with the stadium. So when you see the light go on in people, that sort of helps you know that it's a pretty good story.
Sure.
Because when people go, oh, I didn't realize that. Well, that's the cue for it's a good story. So at some point, you've got to have success with it. You've got to have a you have to have the happy ending scene of people dancing in the streets to make it a good documentary. Once that happens, I think this will be a fascinating story that people want to tell.
And that's kind of like the reason I asked the question is there's and I left out 96. 96 is obviously Nirvana for
sure.
Jaguars fans right now. And just what happened with them to the run they went on, obviously winning the two playoff games on the road.
But it,
all
it
that
came
was unreal.
So soon after, and that was the book that Pete and I wrote. The reason that it was an interesting book to write is you not only had the 96 season, but you had this incredible story of how the town got the team in the first place.
Right.
That was still very fresh at the time, and it all seemed to play into it. It was literally what two or three years from the time that there had been people in town. I can remember sitting in the Times Union newsroom when Pete was trying to tell me, this was when Pete was covering the league and I was covering either Florida or high schools. And everybody, even people in the newsroom, would tell Pete that he was crazy because Pete was saying, look, they're getting the team. And very good journalists would say, well, there's no way. But Pete had sources. Pete had heard from people how this whole thing was going to work. And Pete was nailing all the stories and was breaking all the stories. This was a time when when the conventional wisdom, even around town, among people who didn't know, was that there's no way it would ever happen. And then 3 years later, I'm in Denver,
right,
covering that game and going to the hotel with Bianchi and Prisco and watching the story unfold on sport. People on Sports Area talking about Jacksonville, and we were all just sitting around going, "Wow,
yeah,
this is a weird, amazing thing to be a part of."
Yeah, and look, I know the Jacksonville side of that story, right? And so I would be fascinated just because of the advantages they gave Jacksonville and Carolina coming
right
into the league to see a 30 for 30 about how both cities got their team and just that first couple years, basically.
Or you could just read Jags Your Inches.
Right, but just take me, right, exactly. But just take me through how these cities got those teams and through those first two seasons, and
right,
culminates with both teams going to a championship game. I think that's a fascinating story, and I'm not sure how many NFL fans outside of Carolina
right
and Jacksonville, which are still two of the little boys in the NFL right,
right
now, really know
they
the
do
stories
right
of that. And so I think there's a lot there. The other thing that I keep bouncing around in my own head is a 30 for 30 that starts with Garrard's run against Pittsburgh. You know,
right,
that's the first thing that you see, and then go through the next seven
yeah
or 8 years of, you know, when they draft Blackmon and the whole city thinks that that's the pick, right? Like, it's they're taking
yeah
a risk on a guy for the first time, really, in Gene Smith's tenure. This is the guy who's going to put us over the top on the offensive side of the ball. The disappointment of Gabbert, the disappointment of Blackmon not even being able to stay on the field and everything
right
that's gone on with that. Matt Jones, like, everything that went on with that team from the moment they won that playoff game in 2007 and then lost to the New England
yeah
Patriots the next
for
week.
Harvey, all that, yeah.
Basically up through now, I think is a
yeah
fascinating story. And again, I don't know how many people outside of Jacksonville even have paid attention to it.
Yeah, well, and the only thing they've really paid attention to is outside of Jacksonville for the most part is to sort of continue taking pot shots and, you know, sort of feeding the narrative. So, yeah, I doubt that one would get done because there's not really a happy ending yet, but
I would love for there to be one.
When there is a happy ending, I think some of these would make fascinating documentaries.
Yeah, but I could see that in my head. Like, I can see that Garrard run starting a documentary in my head.
Sure.
And I know it would be compelling to me. You
right
know, outside of Jacksonville, I don't know. I think that the, you know, the city's getting a team gets it. I think the idea of Shad Khan taking over for this
mm-hmm
team and really the way that he's managed the Jacksonville Jaguars since he got it. Not just trying to make it more concrete here in Jacksonville, but doing what he's doing with London and improving the facilities and doing what he has, putting the money that he has into the city. Is
the overreaching story of this franchise is fascinating because of the odds that have always been against it and the perception that has been against it. And they've always sort of had to fight that. Again, fight the perception. Most people listening realize that. So when it gets good, it will be a very happy ending.
Yeah. And if they do the early years, that means that you can be in the 30 for 30.
Yeah, they might even call it Jags to Riches.
They might read that book in preparation for doing that 30 for 30. What we need is a local documentarian. Somebody that's really in love with the city of Jacksonville and the Jaguars to decide that I'm going to take up this mantle and do something with this instead of us just spending 2 hours on a Monday blabbermouthing a little bit about, hey, this would be a pretty good story.
This would be pretty cool. Make a movie out of it.
Yeah, somebody make a movie out of this. Put in all the hours and crazy effort that it takes to turn an idea into something that shows up on the screen, because I know you have some idea about that with that old Jags to Riches book. And just, did you have any idea when you came up or when you and Pete decided, all right, this is good enough to be a book?
Yeah, actually, the story actually is that I forget exactly when it was, but either after they made the championship game or once they lost in it, right around that time, an agent named Stuart Gottesman from, I think he was in California, had contacted Bianchi. And Bianchi was like, yeah, I'd like to do it, but really hadn't been as close throughout the whole process as Pete and I had been. So, you know, we kind of talked about it, and Bianchi called me and was like, yeah, I don't really know. And so he eventually gave a steward our name. So it was the book agent who actually contacted us. And then I remember being on my way out to the Super Bowl after the Jags lost, and I was going to cover Green Bay Patriots were that year. I remember writing, you know, you have to write a draft and there's like a synopsis that they wanted so he could take to the publisher and all this. So I remember doing that during that time and didn't know too much about it. And when you read it, it's not the most well-written book ever written, but it gets the job done in terms of outlining and historifying, if you will, that era. And, you know, credit mostly to Pete, who covered the mother load of that expansion process from 93, I guess, or from even earlier than that.
Sure.
Pete knew to his core so many of the stories of the background of that team, that the two or three chapters on the expansion process and getting the team, I was covering Florida at the time. I had spoken with him about it often, but Pete had the institutional knowledge far more than I did on a lot of that book that really makes it a good, you know, text documentary, if you will, on what was going on at that time.
Yeah, I know. I'm probably among the only 30 somethings in Jacksonville that is still at my local library.
I thought you were going to say you might have been the only people who read it.
No. I'm probably among the only 30-somethings in Jacksonville that still chooses to go to my local library, and I usually go on Friday afternoon.
That's right.
That's my library day. And I'm always wandering through the sports section at some point, and there it is. Jackson the Riches.
Right there.
Every time.
Can't get around it.
Every now and then I'll walk by, I'll just see if it's checked out. And
never is.
You guys are doing all right.
Okay, good.
You're doing all right. It's in about half the time, it's out about half
good.
The time.
That's good.
Same deal with McManus's book. We'll always be pals.
Gotcha.
About his dad. It's in about half the time, it's out about half the time. So
good.
People are reading their Jaguars literature.
That's good. Maybe, I've got a couple of copies. So
we need more
ones,
of it.
Let me know. Yeah.
We need more, Johnny O. We need books. Like, we got all these ideas we've been batting around for the last 10 minutes.
I think the...
Let's write them up.
The X factor there is, it's not coincidental that that was their biggest season, that was their most successful season, and that's the one there's a book about.
No doubt.
Need a little more success.
No doubt. If they make a run with this regime, I have a feeling there's going to be plenty of people that want to write about the rebuilding process in Jacksonville here over the course of the last decade, really, but specifically the last 3 or 4 years. We got this date in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL coming up next. Tony Smith, John Osher here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or if you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 904-620-9225. He is a certified Invisalign provider, offers 10% off for all first-time customers' initial visits. Just visit Dr. James J. McCall, jamesjmccall.com, for a complete list of comprehensive care services today. On this date in football history, got a couple of birthdays of note. Leonard Williams, the defensive tackle who could have been a Jaguar and might have been a Jaguar if a lot of the people listening to me right now were the general manager of the Jacksonville Jaguars, 22 years old today. The pick would have been in lieu of the team actually taking Blake Bortles 3 years ago. Darren Sproles, the kick returner, 33 years old, 11th all-time in NFL history in all-purpose yards right now, 8th in kick return yards in NFL history for Darren Sproles. LeVar Arrington, 38 years old. He was the number 2 overall pick in the 2000 NFL draft. The top 5 that year, to give you an idea of, again, this is how the draft works. There are no guarantees anywhere in the NFL draft. Courtney Brown to the Cleveland Browns at number 1. LeVar Arrington, 2 to Washington. He was okay for, he had a really good run of 3 or 4 years, but only a 6-year career, I think, when everything was said and done. Washington had the 3rd pick overall as well. Chris Samuels, who was a pretty good tackle in the league. Cincinnati, Peter Warwick, 4th overall, did not work. And Jamal Lewis went 5th overall to the Baltimore Ravens. Brian Urlacher, speaking of LeVar Arrington, going 2 overall. Urlacher went 9th that year to the Chicago Bears. And finally, on this date in football history, Lynn Dawson, who turns 81 years old today, 5th overall pick in the 1957 NFL draft by Pittsburgh. And this is a picture of just how much the NFL has changed. Johnny spent the first 3 years in Pittsburgh, then 2 in Cleveland. So 5 years of his NFL career,
right.
His first 5 years, never threw for more than 85 yards in a season.
Yeah.
That was the first 5 years of Lynn Dawson's career. In his 6th year, finally went to the Dallas Texans, got the opportunity to start, led the AFL in completion percentage, which he did 8 times in his career. Touchdown passes, he led the AFL that year as well, which he did 4 of the next 5 years. And after 1 year in Dallas, Dawson went to Kansas City, where he won 2 championships. He was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1987. But spent the first 5 years of his career basically combined throwing for 300 yards.
Yeah, and I think I watched the first part of the O.J. documentary and saw again that I believe he came out in 69. Didn't have a 1,000-yard season until 72.
Yep.
Can you imagine the uproar nationally now? He'd have been cut.
Yeah.
Most likely. I mean, certainly didn't have his breakout season until his 4th year. I'm sure it seemed like an eternity then, but can you imagine it now? I mean, it's just such a different. And I think you said, did you say Leonard Williams was Bortles' year? He was Fowler's year.
Oh yeah, was he?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he was.
Yes. So I figured we'd be getting tweets about that. So I thought I'd mention.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Thanks for correcting me.
No, no problem.
Yeah.
Anytime.
I appreciate it, John.
Do your job.
That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
4-time Pro Bowler and former number 1 overall pick Jake Long is currently a free agent and says, "I'm finally healthy," he told ESPN on Saturday, "the healthiest I've ever been. I've probably felt in the last 5 or 6 years. My knee's back. I've just been working out, feeling good and ready for the opportunity when it comes along." The Bears did have Jake Long in for a workout earlier this month. He's 31 and has not started a game since re-injuring his knee in October of 2014. Bills head coach Rex Ryan is confident from what he's seen from his team this offseason. Rex told reporters on Friday, "I can't wait to get the season started. I'm just telling you right now, forget the vacation. I wish it was shorter, and I mean it. I'm excited about this team. Obviously, a lot of things have to happen, and we're a month or so away, but I told our players to win July. We've already won the offseason. I would challenge any team, but I think we've won the offseason," Rex Ryan says. And in other news, Rex Ryan and his brother Rob were spotted in a Buffalo area park riding a tandem bicycle. So that'd be a good picture to see right there with the two large brothers riding a tandem bike in a Buffalo area park. The rookie wall is a common issue with first-year players, and Steelers first-round pick Bud Dupree says he hit it last year, saying, quote, I just was not used to playing that many games. It took a toll on my body. Now that I'm more prepared for that like that, just a lot of minor things need to do. Just looking at guys like James Harrison, guys that do really take care of their body, I'm starting to follow their lead. Charles Tillman tore his ACL in Week 17 last season, forcing him to miss the Panthers' run to the Super Bowl. He's 5 months removed from surgery, and over the weekend, he was helping his former Bears teammate Matt Forte do a football camp in Louisiana. And Peanut says that if he comes back, he only wants to play for the Carolina Panthers. And one last story here in the Honda Drive Around the NFL. We talked last week, Tony, about Eugene Monroe and how he's all for medical marijuana with the NFL. And, well, at least at last week's Cannabis World Cup Congress and Business Expo, former Chicago Bears quarterback Jim McMahon advocated for marijuana as a medical alternative for pain management. McMahon told the audience that marijuana is not only an effective painkiller, but is also far safer than opioid painkillers that have destroyed thousands of American families. That quote there from Jim McMahon. He was also diagnosed with early onset dementia and other issues that have been linked to the kinds of concussions that he had, and said that marijuana helps him deal with the pain he's got from all of his injuries from his playing career. The sports panel was moderated by former Giants defensive lineman Leonard Marshall, including McMahon, former Broncos tight end Nate Jackson, former Broncos wide receiver Charlie Adams, and former Jaguars offensive tackle, is it Evan or Eben Britton?
Evan.
Evan Bruin. And Britton says that juxtaposing my experience with pharmaceutical drugs by Vicodin and Percocet that made me angry, irritable, and frustrated, and didn't really get rid of any of the pain, it made it difficult to sleep, increased my heart rate, and made me feel crazy. On the other side of that, there's cannabis that helped me sleep, put me into a state of being where I was relieved from stress and anxiety, as well as feeling the pain relief. So that was Britton at the Cannabis World Congress and Business Expo in Chicago last week.
I mean, it's interesting. I certainly think, and I don't know if you agree, John, at some point, medical marijuana is going to come into the National Football League. I don't know how far away we are from that, because I don't know how far away we are from states basically right. Proving it. Some obviously have, but it's going to happen eventually. And again, the NFL having to deal with these issues with this kind of thing, whether it be medical marijuana or how they're dealing with concussion issues and these different things, and the consent that they did or didn't give players the opportunity to have when it came to, we're going to give you Toradol. Well, what does Toradol do? Well, it gets you back on the field. Like, it feels like there were times where doctors basically said that instead of saying, well, you might not be able to walk when you're 50. And it's not that anyone wouldn't take the shot anyway. That was in the middle of that fire. But there needs to be some information given to these guys. And it feels like medical marijuana, if they feel like it's going to help them, and it's less risk than some of these other ways that they've been managing pain in the NFL forever, why wouldn't it come in?
Yeah, they'll be understandably slow on it because it's clearly not one they can be out front on.
Right.
And the legalities of it from state to state, I would think it will be, I would think, and again, I'm not a lawyer, obviously, or anything involved with lawmaking on this front, but it would seem like it would have to be a national illegal situation before the NFL would even think about opening up what to them would be a Pandora's box of issues. So I can't imagine them trying to push the envelope or be the leader on this one. It just doesn't seem like something they would do.
No.
And they can't carry the flag, so to speak, which is pretty obvious.
And it's still a league where, look, Josh Gordon is in the middle of the suspension that he's in the middle of because he was suspended and had a drink on a plane.
Right.
Like, that's still, like, where the NFL is.
Right.
With some of this stuff right now. So even if they made medical marijuana a legit option for these players, I don't think it would be available to everyone. And I think there would be restrictions based on, okay, are you in the drug program? Are you not in the drug program?
Right.
The idea of having to get really independent doctors, like people that are far away from that football team, to make the decision on whether or not they should be allowed to have it, I think there's a lot of issues that the NFL, even when that day comes, is going to have to deal with and start jumping through some hoops to get it legalized within the league itself still.
It feels like it's going to be there eventually, as you say, because it does feel like the momentum is building and eventually will build fast toward national legalization, I guess. But the NFL will certainly be behind that curve.
Yeah. And look, I feel bad for these guys. We get the opportunity to see him every year when we go to the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I mentioned it last year when we were out there in San Francisco. You know, I've been doing the Super Bowl trip now for 5 or 6 years, whatever it is, with Mike every year. And you talk to all these former players who want to come out and say, this right. is what I'm dealing with. It's a pill addiction, all this different stuff that they're dealing with coming out of the league and just trying to come down from the state that you have to put yourself in to play right. NFL football and get from Sunday to Sunday is ridiculous mm-hmm. at times. And this was the first year being out there for a Super Bowl and talking to these former players that it was the most hopeful I've seen it as far as where the medicine is,
right.
The direction of where the medical community is, how much help these guys are actually getting. Guys that I've been talking to for 5 years are actually getting better. Mm-hmm. And it felt like this was the first year where I was hearing that story instead of just, this is what it takes for me to get out of bed
right.
in the morning. So I do think things are going in the right direction. I don't know how much the NFL's helping it
right.
go in the right direction at this point in time, but it does feel like, at least from a science perspective, it's getting better for these guys who played the game.
Yeah, and you would hope it continues to be a focus and it continues to veer in that direction. That's the way it should be.
No doubt. I want to get back into the 53-man roster and some of the number crunching that we'll have to do from a Jaguars perspective with Aaron Colvin being suspended for the first month. What does that mean for the 53-man roster? Who is in danger? I know we said they're going to keep 10 defensive linemen, but if there is somebody in danger in that group, who would that be? And another guy that I think is really interesting that we haven't talked about yet today, as he has switched positions here during this offseason a little bit, is Neil Sterling. And just where does he fit in with this roster right now? Is he a guy that feels like is going to be on the 53-man roster when everything is said and done? We'll get into that. John Osher here with me as we continue along on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Hey! From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, chugging along here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Dempsey on vacation will be for the next week and a half or so still. Fat Tony here with you. John Osher alongside as SportsCenter continues to cover the city of Cleveland. I'm still shocked it's standing, honestly. When they went to the live shot of Cleveland last night after they won that championship, I commented to the people in my room, one, where are the fires? Two, how is everyone still wearing their clothes? I don't understand what's happening in Cleveland right now with the basically riotous behavior that was going on behind him. I was
texting my son this morning, and I said, can you imagine if the Jaguars won it, what this town would be? And he said, people would be injured. And I texted back, I said, in unconventional ways.
Yes, there's no doubt.
It's fun. I mean, it's neat to see this Cleveland thing.
No, it really is, and hopefully soon. Yeah. Sooner rather than later, the city of Jacksonville gets to know what that feels like.
I guess the rumor last night was that, I mean, for a short time, that people in Cleveland had stolen a fire truck, which I guess was later that they had just basically taken over the fire truck. They were on top of it.
Right.
But that would be a thing.
That would be a thing. That would be a thing.
I'm not condoning stealing fire trucks.
I've heard some of the stories coming out of Gainesville, like during some of the championships right. they had. My brother was on the campus down there, and he said, you know, they didn't really know what to do with the first one, but by the time we got to the second basketball championship and the football and everything else that was going on while he was on campus, he was like, they started greasing up the poles right. on the streets, because the first one, they didn't. And people were just climbing onto streetlights
yeah.
and dangling there and then falling onto other people that were
yeah, that's not good.
Partying beneath them. So they put grease on the streetlights so people couldn't get up there anymore.
Yeah. I'd be anti-people falling.
Yeah, the veteran move there
right.
by the city of Gainesville. By the time they got to the second one to take away the opportunity for them to do that, I can't imagine. I honestly can't imagine what the city would be like with that. I was here, but I was a kid. In 96, I was here, but I was really young in 99.
Right.
Like, 2007 is the first Jaguars playoff run where I was covering the team.
Right.
Right at the time. And the feeling in this city was unbelievable. Yeah. And I would guess fairly minor compared
to the euphoria of 96 and 99. I wasn't here. I can't speak to the euphoria, but I would guess that it wasn't quite that.
No.
You know, it's an amazing thing, and it's been so long that I do think there are a lot of people in town who believe and they anticipate that it would be awesome if they won. That's kind of what you hear. Wouldn't it be great? But there are a lot of people who haven't experienced it, and I don't think you realize when a team gets on a roll like that and gets going and gets close, the energy and the euphoria, it's special and unforgettable. And it's why you do all the things in all the years that you're not there.
Sure.
It's to get to that point because it's a real thing.
No, it really is. And I know for me, you know, doing this show, I interact with Jaguars fans obviously every day, specifically on Twitter. And you guys are pretty unbearable now. Like, honestly, Jaguars Twitter, you guys are ridiculous now. I feel bad for the country. If the Jaguars ever won a Super Bowl, what would be unleashed on Jaguars Twitter for the foreseeable future after that would be unbelievable. Like, I want to see what that's going to look like, but, you know, I'm having Chaps in with me on Wednesday. I can't imagine, you know, what the unofficial, like, mascots for the Jaguars online, what it would be like to follow those guys in the wake of this team winning a championship. I can't even picture it in my head.
I'm not sure it would be that legal.
Yeah.
If the Jags ever won, where would the congregation be? Would it be at the beaches? Would it be at the bank? At the landing?
It'd be everywhere. Are you kidding me? I wouldn't want to have to drive anywhere in this city for the 2 days, 3 days after the Jaguars won a championship. I think it would be everywhere. I said during the draft, I was surprised when they traded up to get Miles Jack. I said I was surprised when I was leaving my house that there weren't people like in my neighborhood just yelling outside up to the heavens, like, we got Miles Jack. Like, I was surprised.
Running through the streets.
Right, because that's the way it felt, right? A championship, there's no way anyone's still in their house.
It kind of goes back to what we talked earlier in the show. That I have people when I travel nationally and friends of mine who have known a long time in the media, and they ask about the fan base. And you try to explain to them how passionate it is and how ready this town is to re-embrace. And they don't really understand the passion of it, the connection that there is to the fans. And I think that only will grow as they continue to get better. But it's a real thing. And as much as we joke, the celebration and the enthusiasm as this thing starts to improve, I think is going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun.
And I'm the old cynical guy who doesn't get excited about very much, but that would be cool.
It's fun when they win a game in this city right now. It was fun when they had a run where it looked like, ooh, December could mean something for this franchise last year. The feeling, I remember 2007 vividly. I was too young, 96 and 99, to really appreciate it. And 2007, I was in the middle of it. And it was unreal. Just the feeling in the city was unreal. And the idea of them getting back to even those kind of heights where they can go on the road and win a playoff game. And for the fans who haven't experienced that, the young kids in the city who don't know what that feels like at all, to celebrate a winner in the National Football League, it's pretty unbelievable. And hopefully those times are coming again soon for this team and this fan base. We wanted to talk a little bit more about the 53-man roster and some of the questions they're going to have. We mentioned right before the break there, specifically Neil Sterling, who's a draft pick last year, a late draft pick last year, spent the entire year on the practice squad for the Jags last year.
Came up late in the season.
They're kind of switching him out. He's going from wide receiver to tight end, kind of that move tight end position. What have you heard about him and that transition and where he stands right
now? Well, I think the transition's going well, and it's a transition that makes perfect sense based on his body type. I think he's a guy who this could be a real home run at some point. Putting him in this spot, he is a prototype physically for the move tight end, and he will be a very difficult matchup. Now, I do agree. I think O'Halloran said that he might spend a year on the practice squad at this position. That makes a lot of sense. Because I don't know that he will necessarily be ready to make a quick impact, but he could easily be a guy who spends a short amount of time on the practice squad next year. And then if there's an injury, could be a call-up who matters. Because you need guys, if you're going to build a roster, it's hard to get every key guy over the long term, meaning over a 4 or 5 year period, out of the draft or unrestricted free agency.
Sure.
There's a lot of equity to put in. Sterling could be a guy who winds up being a, wow, where did he come from guy who really makes an impact at this spot because he's a fit.
What about Koyak versus Sterling as far as the 53-man roster?
For this year, I'd say early Koyak probably makes sense there for now. But I think in the long run, I think Sterling will be a big factor.
And I think it's kind of an interesting question in the same vein that the running backs and who they want to keep mm-hmm. and what kind of guy they want to keep is with the tight end position. They need somebody that can help them on special teams, obviously,
right.
down there on that depth chart, because you know what the top looks like with Julius and Mercedes Lewis. It's beyond that. Nick Jacobs is more that blocking tight end, mm-hmm. so it feels like they don't have that really.
Yeah, he's really that guy.
Yeah, so you'd want to keep him on the
right.
roster, so you feel like he's probably going to be a part of the 53. And then it's, what do you want to do with that fourth tight end?
Right.
And whether you want it to be Koyak or you want it to be a guy like Sterling, who mm-hmm. feels like almost a direct backup to Julius Thomas.
Right.
In the same way that, like, Jones would be a direct backup to one of the running backs.
Correct.
But
right.
not the starter, right? Like, he doesn't have much of a role
right.
unless somebody gets hurt. But if somebody gets hurt, it feels like Sterling could be the starter.
And we tend to get locked into the 53 because that's the number and that's the final roster. A lot of times these young guys on the practice squad, it's really 57, 58 and a half-ish. Because there's a lot of guys who realistically you can put on the practice squad. It's a long shot to think they're going to get claimed by another team. And then they become sort of guys who, over the course of time, they might spend 5 or 6 weeks during the season on the active roster
mm-hmm.
and might even at some point play a key role. Nick Jacobs, I remember back in his first year here, I believe he was on the practice squad briefly, came up and all of a sudden was an integral part of the team for a short time. So 53, yeah, but just because a guy gets released off the 53 if he's a rookie doesn't mean he's not going to play a factor at some point down the road. So just because Neil Sterling's not in that final 53 doesn't mean he wouldn't figure into this team's plans pretty significantly.
Right. Defensive backs, and I know I'm looking at the Rockos right now. It just happens to be the one that's up in front of me. He's got him keeping 9. Aaron Colvin obviously suspended for the first month of the season. Dwayne Grotz feels like kind of the guy that's going to make the roster because Colvin's not going to be available
yeah.
for that first month. Is there any consideration from a Jaguars perspective about keeping somebody at another position and feeling like, say, a guy like Peyton Thompson, who they're playing at free safety right now,
right.
if they feel like he can kind of play that cornerback spot if they need him to
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah.
So they have that flexibility with that specific guy. Do they make the decision that instead of keeping Grotz, we keep somebody at another position? How serious a consideration would that be?
Yeah, I doubt. I mean, I think Grotz is certainly on the team. I mean, I say on the team because obviously training camp and preseason is where this all plays out. Good chance that Grotz makes the team primarily because Colvin won't be up for those first 4 games. Now, once that comes time for Aaron to come back, well, that's 4 months into the season and so much changes in terms of injuries, in terms of a roster needs in certain places. It's hard to predict, but that would be Grotz certainly seems like a much safer bet to make the roster because Colvin's suspended.
Sure.
And Colvin, when he gets back, I'm sure people who have read and followed, Colvin looks really, really good during the offseason. And he was the guy, I don't know if the switching from outside corner to inside corner was a little too much last year. Didn't have the year that I thought he would last year, but this will be his second fully healthy year this year once he gets back. I still think he's a guy who could be a really good impact player for this team. And I'd be a little surprised if he's not a real factor at nickel once he gets back.
And one of the big questions for this team, obviously going through the first month of the season without Colvin, is who's playing the nickel?
Right.
And who do they feel comfortable with that? We were discussing this off air earlier today, but it feels like Ramsey was picking everything up quickly enough that we even had Gus Bradley in studio, and he kind of laughingly said, I think you need to be looking at nickel. Like, he was saying that to Jalen Ramsey because of how quickly he was picking up what they wanted him to pick up.
Well, that's got to be on their mind a little bit, right?
It'd be asking an awful lot of a rookie to put him in that spot for the first month.
Yeah, and so what you wonder is, there'll be time for them to figure this out. I mean, you've got some preseason games, you've got training camp, and I'm sure that'll be something that they're massaging as they go along. Where
Absolutely.
Are we going to play this kid early?
Yeah.
What's the best way for him in terms of long-term development? They've been very clear over the last two or three years that their philosophy with these young guys, they want to get them at a position, not overwhelm them early, and have them, they say, master the position, which you don't master at that age, but get it. Get to where they're comfortable, and then have that be their leaping off point to more responsibility. So they're going to wrestle with that compared to, is this the best person to play the nickel situation? So do you have Jalen just play nickel early, have Prince and Devon start on the outside? Is it too much to ask Jalen to play on the outside and then move to the inside? That's a big task to have him doing that within the structure of a game for the first month of the season. That's a lot to handle. But as I've said a couple of times this offseason, these young kids, meaning Fowler, Jack, and Ramsey, have special things about them.
Yep.
They might be special athletes. Special sometimes overcomes conventional wisdom. So conventional wisdom would say that's too much for a guy to do. If they're elite, if they're that good, then maybe they start toying with that idea. It's clear from listening to Gus that nickel for Jalen Ramsey is on their mind. And
absolutely,
how
yeah.
quickly that happens, that's sort of an internal conflict going on right now that has to be decided during camp.
Yeah, and I think it's...
I don't think they know the answer to it yet.
No, I don't think there's a clear answer to it, but you can tell the team really wants to have a look at Jalen Ramsey playing the nickel. And it feels like that may be where he lands in the early part of the season.
Well, when you watch this kid move around, even injured, when you watch him run, you want to get a look at him anywhere. Because this kid has some magical qualities to him. So that's the thing. He's the kind of guy you look at when you watch him on film and you see him, his physicality and what he can pick up. He's the kind of guy that coaches sit around and go, hey, maybe we can put him there.
Yeah.
And they start high-fiving each other. Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what goes on with a kid like this and Miles Jack. It's not where should we put him. It's different guys saying we can put him here, we can put him here, we can put him here. And you're like, whoa, he can only play one spot at a time.
Yeah.
But that's when it starts getting fun.
And it's trying to make sure that you're not putting too much on that guy's plate, because obviously there'll be a big temptation to do that, especially with those two guys.
Right.
And I feel like with Ramsey, there's a lot more clear idea of what they want to do with him early on. With Miles Jack, I haven't got a sense of what they want his role to be early.
I think Miles Jack, I see really starting off more in sub packages at the start. And as soon as you say sub packages, people say, oh, he's not starting. Well, sub packages for this defense are as important, if not more, than the base packages, because their huge offseason emphasis, with reason, has been improve on third down. Mm-hmm. third down. So if Miles Jack plays only in sub packages and he improves you on third down, then you might be the most important player on the defense, even if he's not starting.
And it makes sense then for what they did, at least during the mini camp and when he was here in the rookie orientation, to have him working at the mic to try
to learn
that mic position, so that if they decide that their best personnel package on third down at linebacker is Jack and Telvin, that Jack can call the defense. They're taking their middle linebacker off the field at that point in time, so it makes sense then to be training him the defense from that perspective.
And I'm not so sure that it might not be Paz and Jack on the field at first.
Could be.
On those third downs, because Paz really knows the defense. Again,
it's a question of how quick they pick up everything.
Everybody wants an answer right now, and I think training camp and preseason are when these answers are going to flush out. And I think they have options with these guys, and they're not quite sure. These guys haven't played their way into deciding what those options are going to be.
Right.
And as much as people want the answers right now, and I'd love to know the answers right now, that's what those 4 weeks are going to be for.
Sure.
Of training camp.
And they should be.
And
for
but the cool thing is, they're going to be good answers.
Yeah. You feel like whatever right. the answer is, it's a good one.
Right.
Whatever the answer is, it adds up to a better Jacksonville Jaguars
right.
defense.
And that's the thing. It's like, you know, you're looking for an answer that's the better of two options, not the lesser of two evils.
Right. Which, again, they haven't been in that position defensively right. in quite a while with this kind of influx of talent coming into this roster. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight, some of your answers here in just a moment, as today we're asking with the OJ Made in America documentary ending this weekend, which may have been the best 30 for 30 thing that I've seen, and I've watched them all. They've all been really good. Mm-hmm. This one was as good as anything they've done on ESPN. Outside of the 1996 season, when it comes to the Jaguars, what Jaguars-centric, what Jaguars-focused story do you think would make for the best ESPN 30 for 30? We'll get to some of your answers at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, at John Osier, as well as on the Facebook page, facebook.com/JaguarsToday. As we continue along, it is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, got a few minutes left here. Fat Tony, John Osher here alongside. As we continue along on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop price in the USA, guaranteed. Trade your gold for guns. Just visit gunsforjacks.com or give them a call at 904-693-0777. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight question of the day today. Again, I pat myself on the back a little bit for this one. I like this question, and I almost feel bad having to use it on June 20th instead of waiting for the dead of July when there's really nothing going on, but it struck me today.
You'll use it again.
Yeah, in light of the OJ documentary, the Made in America, that's been going on for the last week. It's kind of a special event on ESPN, really. One of the best things they've done, and 30 for 30s have been unreal. I mean, there's a lot of them that are very, very memorable, but this one will be right at the top of the list just for basically cutting out this piece of American history that I didn't know much about
right.
and putting it on the screen. I mean, it was incredible watching how the whole thing unfolded. That fourth episode when a juror looked at the camera and was asked, why did you vote to acquit, and said, this one's for Rodney King. And after watching the first 3.5 episodes and being like in my head being like, I know where that lady's coming from.
Right.
You know, after watching the 3.5 episodes that I've watched, I know where she's coming from. I still hate the fact that they feel like they need to come from there if you're right. on that jury, but I can understand the sentiment that they had at that point in time. I mean, it was incredible, and I had never seen the OJ story put in that kind of perspective before. So just great stuff. But today, asking Jaguars fans, outside of 96, because I just didn't want an avalanche of the 96 season, obviously, dummy, outside of 96, what Jaguar-centric story would you like to, would you think would make the most compelling ESPN 30 for 30? Got some good answers today. On Facebook from Damon, he said the 2016 Jaguars blueprint of the perfect free agency and draft. Ryan said, was thinking about Touchdown Jacksonville, how it came to be, the hard work of Tom Petway and the likes did to win the bid of an expansion franchise for the city. Again, I think that's a fantastic one, is the idea of how Jacksonville wound up with a franchise. And I think you take it up through that 96 AFC championship game. And I think that would be a great, great ESPN 30 for 30. No doubt. It is that book turned into a movie. From Brian, I'll defer to the Coughlin era in general. What he did from 95 to 2002 put this team on the map. It spoiled us, but laid a great foundation. From Daniel, not being able to beat the Titans in 99 when they were clearly the best AFC team. They weren't better than the Titans, apparently. From Michael, 2008, the year that was supposed to be but ended up a complete disaster after that Pittsburgh playoff win, all the pundits praising Jacksonville as Super Bowl contenders. The locker room was a complete mess. From Kenneth, talent wasted. The RJ Soward and Justin Blackmon story. You can add Matt Jones to that list if you'd like to. as well as a couple others. That's just been how it's worked from Marshall. How about Jack naming DG9 the quarterback, which is a fascinating story.
Yeah.
Just how that happened. And again, it's one of those that I'm not sure outside of Jacksonville how many people even know. You know, how many people were watching.
Yeah, you gotta be paying close attention.
Yeah, Byron Leftwich on that preseason game, standing up there. And it's just, and a day later, basically, we're sitting there going, we're doing what?
Right.
We're doing what in Jacksonville? They're doing what?
And what was it, 2 or 3 years later with the, you're releasing David.
Yeah.
The same, you know.
Yeah. You could go through that whole story. Like, it could start with him getting the job over.
Sure.
And then the contract and the great year that he had, the win in 07 in the playoffs against Pittsburgh on the road. And then he speaks at a luncheon, and after a luncheon gets called into the office, essentially, to be let go.
It was a thing.
Not exactly the right way to do it. Another vote here for the 1999 season in Tennessee. Tommy says the Jags initiative in London and how that's working would be interesting. And I think it would be part of a movie that's just about the NFL in Europe in general. And it would be like an NFL Europe thing. And then it's, and this is like the inroads they're trying to make now. It's just a different look at how the NFL is trying to break in.
And that's probably to be played out a little more than to be a documentary right now, because we've got to see the ending of that.
No doubt. And a lot of votes for Richard Collier. And that story feels like it's made for a 30 for 30.
Sure.
It really does. And we all kind of are aware of the Richard Collier story here in Jacksonville. But that's the kind of thing where he's doing well enough now that it is, you know, one of those where it has kind of the rally around it ending to it.
Right.
Despite how tragic the actual story was. What did we get on Twitter today, Tyler?
On Twitter, Josh says, countless receiver busts. That and the Richard Collier thing seem to be the two leading responses about Richard Collier, and countless receiver busts, including Justin Blackmon. Eric Harris says, either the heartbreak of 99 or the 07 team that ran into the juggernaut Patriots. Matt Miller says, the story of Thunder and Lightning would be a good one. Clayton says, 07 season for sure, and that drop by Northcutt in 07. A couple more responses here for Justin Blackmon. Duval Doom says, definitely 99, especially if they man up and admit the Titans had our defensive audibles. Brad says, the Gene Smith drafts, the thinking behind those picks, man, that was terrible. Osha Fisher says, easy, Wayne Weaver's sale of the team and how close they were to relocating. And Orlando Strong, Phil the Filipino on Twitter, says, getting the team in the first place, perhaps. And a couple more responses. A lot of responses I thought we'd get some more would be Shad Khan and the story about him as a person and how he kind of, not really so much sports related, but as a person, his story is pretty incredible.
It's a pretty incredible story. Almost owned the St. Louis Rams before he became the Jaguars owner. I mean, it's a really fascinating tale. And then everything he's done since he's become the owner of this particular team. I thought the idea, I love the idea of basically showing that run against Pittsburgh and then doing a story about what happened for the next 5 or 6 years here in Jacksonville. Basically, like, that being this franchise's last real moment in the sun was 2007, but it's the, and it's really an NFL story as much as anything else, but the false hope that you feel, you know, the, when you draft a guy like Blackmon and you're like, this is it, this is the answer. And fan bases, look, there's 32 of them, and all 32 of them at some point have done it.
Yeah.
Where they thought they found the answer, and then it turns out that they didn't for whatever reason, which I think is a really compelling story. And the other one I haven't seen or heard mentioned yet is how the Jaguars got Fred Taylor.
Yeah.
And just the story, because that's kind of part of the history of that 96 to 99 run.
Right.
Is Fred Taylor winding up here in Jacksonville, but it's Rob Johnson having that one day in the sun and the Jaguars being able to turn that into Fred Taylor, but they didn't want it to be Fred Taylor.
Right.
The idea that Tom Coughlin wanted it to be Curtis Enos, I think, is a really, really fascinating kind of offshoot to that whole Fred Taylor story.
Well, and it speaks, too, of the changing dynamic of the league and how the league changes over time. There was probably a time, you know, that was what, 98, Fred got drafted. There was probably a time 10 years before that where maybe Curtis Enos was the right player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you looked at a Fred Taylor and wondered, you know, is that the best, you know, is it, is his style better? Is Curtis Enos' style better? Then, of course, Curtis got hurt. So Fred's style was perfect for when he played. And it also speaks to how tough it is to analyze talent. Because once Fred got into the league, you could look at him and see, wow, this is a prototype, a prototypical back for all time. Size, mm-hmm. speed, whatever. But didn't see it at Florida until maybe the very end. And, you know, you just don't know on guys when you draft them. I had people in my newspaper wanting me to write stories about Fred Taylor being a bust 2 or 3 weeks into his career. I didn't write that story. I was glad.
It's a good thing you didn't. I have a feeling that one would be thrown in your face over and over and over again if you had. That'll do it for us today. What do you have coming up on Jaguars.com?
We're going to look back a couple of days on last week's minicamp and on the offseason as a whole. I mean, it's I think we learned some things, and we'll talk about them all week.
Okay. I know it's the off season.
It's the off season.
We got to figure some things out.
That's right.
Here for the next 6 weeks, and we will continue to. We'll see you again next weekend here, John.
All right, buddy. Thank you
for joining me today. So for John Osher, for myself, Fat Tony, for Mike Dempsey on vacation, for Joe Fortunato, who's over at the stadium listening to them pound on the ceiling, and for Tyler Devitt, that'll do it for us for a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. We'll welcome the boys of the Midday Chalk next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.